Transfiguration has embarrassed and perplexed many New Testament commentators who see it as a mythological intrusion into a down-to-earth account of a this-worldly, utterly human Jesus whom they want secular-minded folk to take seriously. So they've tried to explain it away in one of two ways. It could have been a mountaintop hallucinatory experience. It can sometimes happen as you near a hilltop that you can be enveloped in low-flying cloud formations that are backlit by the sun, producing ethereal visual phenomena. Figures appear and disappear as the clouds pass over rapidly, and mountaintops can psych people up to expect the unusual. The other explanation is that the Gospel writers took their later experiences of the resurrection of Jesus and retrojected them back into this incident as a way of framing up the impending death of Jesus on the cross. His humiliating death was a troubling and difficult event for his followers to explain, so they position this resurrection-like experience at the front end of it as a way of alerting readers to the happy ever-after ending of the story. There is a very limited truth to this take on the Transfiguration. Most contemporary commentaries point to the way in which the point of this event was to strengthen Jesus and his inner core of followers so that they could cope with the appalling events about to take place on the hill of Golgotha. And that it's certainly true that the Transfiguration marks a transition point between the ministry of Jesus as a teacher and wonder worker and the deeper meaning of his ministry in the climactic stage of it, as he gives his life in a way which changes things decisively for the better for the human race. But this is more than just a summit conference on discouragement, in which the two key figures from Israel's religious tradition share their experiences of rejection and advise Jesus on what to do about it. If the death and resurrection of Jesus is God's yes that overcomes all human no's, then how does it do that? What divine resources does it draw on to achieve this extraordinary outcome? And how does this event recast what is about to follow as being about more than just the routine judicial execution of an obscure religious troublemaker? Earlier ages of the Church and the world of Eastern Orthodoxy have seen the deeper meaning and significance of what took place here. It's a parallel event with the baptism of Jesus, one in which the Trinity disclosed and revealed itself just as it is. The cloud is the way the Holy Spirit becomes visible in this incident. The Father speaks his confirming words of approval. "This is my Son, the Beloved, listen to him." And Jesus is revealed, glistening with the uncreated light flowing out of him, which is the way he is in himself, as the second person of the Trinity. In other words, Jesus has shown the three disciples who he really is in the place where God dwells, as he is one of the triune persons. Thomas Aquinas wrote of the beatific vision as the great reward and goal of the life of heaven. "We shall wonder and praise and adore the beauty and glory of God." Peter, James and John received an advanced preview of this. They see the end goal of where life on terrestrial earth is going. "We were made to be within the force field of the divine life in all its radiance and attracting splendor and compassionate energy and healing power." This briefly radiates out from Mount Tabor, and it declares that what is about to take place in Jerusalem will be trumped by this primal energy, which will work through the events of this emerging tragedy in such a way that the newness and the freshness of the Christian hope will become the pivot point of human history. All history will pass through the cross. To speak of God, or to imagine him, or to think of who and what he is in himself, is to be in the business of contemplating pure being itself. The plenitude of being, the radiating splendor that makes the stars move and the worlds turn. We are only derivative creatures formed of dust, but with a spark of his greatness within us, if we will but let it emerge through Christian belief and practice. To talk about God in this way is to use the language of metaphysics, the way the Greeks found to discuss divine reality, and one in which the Christian faith made itself at home. But its original set of ideas came from biblical apocalyptic literature, in which as the stars begin to fall and as the empires of the earth collapse, his humble champions are vindicated. The Transfiguration is an apocalyptic event in which God declares his hand, reveals his identity, and prefigures what will be. Now the end game of the human story begins to develop. Evil can fight its rearguard action, but in the long run, it hasn't got a show up against the primal source of power. Peter, James, and John were frightened by what they saw. Icons of this event had them prostrated on the earth, taking cover in the contours of the terrain. So great is the mystery of God, his incomprehensibility, his Shekinah glory, that he can never be reduced to just a fascinating visual phenomena for our viewing enjoyment. Thomas Aquinas saw that if we viewed him directly, we would, as it were, blow a fuse. So he ventured the opinion that God will graciously allow us to think some of his thoughts after him, to share in some of his intuitions about himself, to catch some of the backtrack of his self-perceptions, and in this way, to be protectively shielded from the too much of the beatific vision. We will see it at one remove. What gives the Transfiguration authenticity as more than visual hallucinations or creative gospel rewriting is the corroborative evidence of 2 Peter that we heard this morning, and this is a paraphrase version of it. As the author writes, "We weren't, you know, just wishing on a star when we laid the facts out before you regarding the powerful return of our Master Jesus Christ. We were there for the preview. We saw it with our own eyes. Jesus, resplendent with light from God the Father, as the voice of majestic glory spoke. We were there on the holy mountain with him. We heard the voice out of heaven with our own ears." And the point of it all was to give us confidence for the future, that we have been given the inside running on how things will turn out, no matter how rugged things turn out to be in the in-between time. As Peter writes, "We couldn't be more sure of what we saw and heard. God's glory, God's voice. The prophetic word was confirmed to us. You will do well to keep focusing on it. It is the one light you have in a dark time as you wait for daybreak and the rising of the morning star in your hearts." Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.